I've never really been one that's that leans toward prescription, right? Like, do this and that should fix it, right? It's more about building up someone's own intuition and instinct and nurturing that inner voice that can say yes or no, or I'll try this, and building up that self-trust. But it is, again, it's hard to do that on platforms that really are so short, short-term, or, you know, two-dimensional.
Hi, this is Danae. I'm the founder of Simple Families. Simple Families is an online community for parents who are seeking a simpler, more intentional life. In this show, we focus on minimalism with kids, positive parenting, family wellness, and decreasing the mental load. My perspectives are based in my firsthand experience raising kids, but also rooted in my PhD in child development. So you're going to hear conversations that are based in research, but more importantly, real life. Thanks for joining us. Happy New Year! 2022 marks the fifth anniversary of the Simple Families podcast. I started this podcast back in February of 2017, sitting on the floor of my master bedroom closet with a cheap microphone and a laptop, because I had read that the best place to record a podcast is in your closet because all of the clothes dampen the sound. A lot has changed since then. The show has seen more than 4.5 million downloads. It's in the top 1% of podcasts throughout the world, which is a huge accomplishment that I'm very proud of. The show was growing rapidly in the first 3 years, and then the pandemic hit and things got pretty stagnant. Downloads just kind of stayed stable. In the past 2 years, the reach of the podcast hasn't really grown. And of course, you know, I thought it must be something that I'm doing wrong. Maybe I'm repeating myself all the time. I don't know. But I started asking around to other podcasters and found that many other people who podcast on similar topics to mine have experienced the same thing. Now, one explanation could be that podcasting has grown immensely and there's a lot of competition out there. But what I suspect is that a lot of people have moved from podcasts to short form content. As our lives have become more overwhelmed, we want to get more bang for our buck. We're leaning on 30 seconds of parenting content on TikTok, or reading over one square of five quick tips on Instagram. If you're listening to this podcast, you might not be one of those people who has made the shift over to short form content, but you might be impacted by it more than you think. That's what I want to talk about today, this shift towards shorter and shorter form content for really big topics like parenting and self-help. Today, I'm joined by my good friend, Eden Hyder. If you've read my book, I talk about Eden on page one because she really was part of my page one. She was probably my very first mom friend. We both became mothers right around the same time. We bonded quickly over our messy houses and the fact that we were both mental health professionals. I'm happy to have Eden here today to listen and be my sounding board as I'm talking through this topic that's been on my mind for quite a while. I see a crazy number of one-minute reels on Instagram that do have valuable content, but it's like a fire hose coming at you faster than you can handle. And I'm worried it might be hurting more than it's helping. There are so many well-intentioned professionals, speech pathologists, OTs, therapists, teachers, psychologists, nurses, financial experts teaching budgeting. So many amazing professionals sharing their best tips and tools and strategies. In just 1 minute, you can learn how to be all the things. And I don't know about you, but that feels heavy and unhealthy. I hope you find this episode useful, and I'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts? Send me a message. Without further ado, here's my chat with Eden. Hi, Eden. How are you?
Hi, Danae. Good to see you. I'm excited to be here.
It's good to have you here. So I have been thinking for the past few months, actually maybe much of 2021, about how overwhelmed I've been feeling with the parenting and self-care, self-help content on social media, especially mm-hmm. Instagram, TikTok, 1 minute reels, that sort of thing. So yeah. I want to talk to you about it and hear how it makes you feel. And talk about like this pressure. I feel like there's a lot of pressure on parents to be therapists to their kids. Do you feel mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
What is that about? Like, where did that come from?
I think there's a lot of as parents, we have a lot of fear about how our kids are going to do. And we have kind of this illusion of control too, that like we can control the destiny of our children. And yes, we influence and we impact, but I think we want to be good parents. And out of that desire, it gets distorted and we try to be too much for our kids, therapist, among other things, right?
Yeah. A lot of hats that we try to wear.
Too many.
And I feel like there are a lot of well-intentioned educators and mental health professionals like you and I who are online and sharing content. And sometimes I just feel like we're giving more than people can really digest. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think you and I probably both contemplate that as well, as we think about and consider the content that we put out, not wanting to overload, but also really, I think, wanting to trust our followers and people that are interested by what we post, trust them and encourage them to disconnect when they feel they need to, or when they're being negatively impacted by maybe a post that's really positive or really helpful, that it becomes too much.
Yeah. And I think that happens all the time. Like a lot of the things that I read online, especially on Instagram, I see a lot of these like images with lots of things you should say to your kids, things you shouldn't say to your kids, like 4 steps, 4 pieces of advice. And when I read those things, I feel like those are things I should be able to easily implement just through reading a few brief statements. And often it's much more complicated than that. So I see all these things I should be doing, but actually implementing them, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, that's something that I've found when people message me with very specific anecdotes that they want help with. I tend to really shy away from giving or prescribing, right? Like do this, this, and this, because I don't know, right? Like the depth and the breadth of their situation. And really what my hope is in my messages back are really just to validate their own sense of self-knowledge, right? That like they experience the situation in a certain way and they can discern, they have the capacity within them to discern what to do or how to respond and what's best for their family, their kiddo, their situation. But it can be completely overwhelming, constantly seeing and having your social media flooded with posts about do this, do that. And I think depending on our kiddos, depending on us, we have different trigger buttons, right? So I might be totally fine seeing a post about kiddos that struggle with anxiety. But when I see a post about a kiddo that's struggles with depression, or a kiddo that struggles with food, that might be something that hits a more personal button, and where it might not overwhelm you, it might add to my overwhelm.
Yeah. And I think that some of this content makes parents feel like they should be able to fix all these things themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I've recently read 2 books that were intended for parents. One was for parents who were meant to be social skills coaches for their kids. And the other one meant to be parents as anxiety coaches for their kids. And I had to listen to several parts of these books more than once because it was heavy, a lot of content for me to digest, even though I'm very well familiar with these areas. And all I could think about during these books was like, what would a lay parent who doesn't have a psychology background or doesn't have an education background, how would they experience this sort of material? I mean, are they going to feel like failures when they say, oh, this is, I should be able to teach my kids social skills and I should be able to coach them through their anxiety. And then they are faced with this material that is so complex and so multifaceted that it's more than they can handle. It's above their pay grade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we all were taught to ignore our limitations, right? Yeah. And we each have so many of those. And so wearing all these hats, it becomes kind of stepping into roles, all these roles that we can't do any of them well.
Yes.
And it also, I think, disrupts something that can be of huge value to our kiddos, which is building a support system, right? There are multiple people that are feeding into their lives and offering value and resource to them. And I think when we try and take all of those roles on ourselves as maybe part of control or part of fear, it can really hinder our kiddos' growth.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're trying to be everything and do everything, and we're eliminating the role that other adults might be really playing in their lives that is valuable to them.
And even as I'm saying this, I'm aware that we're telling people who put on a bunch of hats to stop putting on the hats. Right. And then there's going to be that, right? That sense of, well, I shouldn't have, or I should have. And it is, yeah. It's just this dilemma as a parent to do or not to do, to be or not to be.
Yeah. And I do think that we are faced with so much information, whether it's books or social media or whatever it is, that I feel like, I mean, and I feel the same way about cooking and recipes, right? Like there are millions of recipes at my fingertips. Mm-hmm. Like, why is my cooking still subpar? Like, why am I, why is my food not better? Like, I have all this information at my fingertips. Yeah. Like, why is it not amazing? Yeah. And I mean, yeah. The truth is I'm just like, I get overwhelmed by it, and choosing recipes from like choosing 5 recipes for 1 week out of a million overwhelms me, and I don't put the effort into it as a result. And I kind of wonder if there are a lot of people out there feeling like that about parenting content and self-care and self-help.
Yeah. I think I feel like I've come across a lot of people who have read all the books, have done all the things, they've scanned all the social media accounts, but they're still stuck. And just as much as we don't want to be our kiddos' therapists, it might actually help our kiddo more if we ourselves find a therapist, right? Or get that therapeutic help for ourselves, or cooking help for ourselves, right? we take classes ourselves to help ourselves do better, be better. And that flows down into our family system.
Yeah. I just recently thought of this analogy that makes a lot of sense to me, is that I feel a certain way when I walk into libraries. I feel like there's so much I don't know, and I get really overwhelmed just looking at all the books, thinking there is so much out there that I don't know. And I don't know if anyone else feels like that, but I think that when we're digesting little bits of short form content on social media or otherwise, that it almost is like reading the book jackets of 1,000 books, and you leave feeling inspired, but not sure what your next step is. You don't know how to act, how to make change, and all that inspiration. I don't know about you, but I feel like if I can't implement it, then I start feeling like a failure.
Yeah. I think I've noticed myself, I really narrow the accounts that I follow or that I spend time on. Right. And tend to really invest in those accounts. And that's probably a way where you can say, okay, I really align with how this person talks, how they post. And I want to really focus in this area. That feels more applicable than scanning all these different people who probably are opposing each other in various ways, right?
Right.
Getting all this conflicting information. And there's kind of this paralysis that happens.
Yeah. And then you feel like you're doing everything wrong. I remember a year or two ago, I was working with this family who had a special needs child who had the child, it was an adopted child. So they had some mental health therapy, they had speech therapy, they had physical therapy, lots of different professionals working together with them. And the mom was just like, you know, I'm never doing anything right. Everyone tells me I'm just doing everything wrong all the time. I'm like, well, what do you mean by that? And she's like, yeah, well, the speech therapist said to do this and the behavior therapist said to do this, and they're different things. So I must be doing them wrong. And it's true that different professionals with different trainings and different from different disciplines have differing viewpoints. And I think, and even within the fields of mental health, different therapists have different viewpoints and different strategies and models that they work from. And it does feel like you can't be doing, you're going to find ways where you're quote unquote messing up the more, the deeper you dig, right?
Yeah. You know, early on in my getting my master's, I honed in on this phrase of good enough. You can only be, and you really only need to be the good enough mother. And that is so freeing as a reminder, right? That we can only be good and be good enough for our kiddos. We can't be perfect. We can't do all the things right. We're going to mess up, and that's a given. And embracing that as a way to really demonstrate to our kiddos that like we are human too. We have limitations and we mess up, and learning how to integrate those mess ups into the family conversation, that feels valuable and beneficial to our children and their emotional intelligence.
Yeah. Well, and I think so often we think when we mess up that, or when we yell or when we lose it, and that we're traumatizing our kids. And that's a big fear that I've been hearing from parents online is, am I going to traumatize my child when ... I hear that question all the time. Is that something that you worry about? Do you worry about traumatizing your kids?
Oh, totally. Yes, absolutely. especially because as a therapist, right, I sit here and I hear about all the things that parents have done from these adult children, right? So they're sitting in my office and they're saying, yeah, when I was 5, when I was 6, when I was 13, all these things that they remember that their parents have probably no recollection of. And those moments can haunt me if I let them. Because I do, you know, an interaction might happen with my kiddos and I think, oh my goodness, is that going to be it? Right? Like, is that what they're going to hold on to? Is that the word? Is that the tone of voice? And it is, it can be completely terrifying, if I let it, but I think again, it's about leaning back into that good enough, and really trusting in the repair of the relationship. That actually teaching repair also helps teach resilience and helps them understand how to resolve their own conflict ultimately.
Yeah. You know, so I don't worry about traumatizing my kids. I have the total opposite experience. And I think that comes from the fact that I have worked with some quite traumatized children as a social worker, you know, kids who have been through severe neglect and sexual abuse and physical abuse and emotional abuse. And I've seen how resilient kids are and how resilient those parent-child relationships are more so. That's something I think that in my early days, you know, as a parent-child therapist working with that population, especially, that really sticks with me was that, especially working in foster care, you know, working to reunify families to get kids back into their biological families, is that those kids love their parents. That bond is so strong, even in the face of trauma. And I see that good enough work that I'm doing with my kids and how I have largely been able to protect them from a lot of the big stuff like, you know, neglect and sexual abuse and physical abuse and emotional abuse. Not that I'm emotionally the most perfect present, like articulate therapeutic mother ever by any means, but I feel like I'm doing pretty good with where I'm at. And I'm, like I said, far from perfect, but, and that helps me to know, like, you know, the little stuff, the little arguments, the, the hard times are going to become part of their life experience for sure. But are they going to become this traumatic experience that impairs them for the rest of their life? Probably not. But I mean, like you said, I think that all parents are going to do things that upset and harm in some way their kids without them even knowing it.
And I think there's, again, there's freedom. There's been freedom for me just embracing that. Hey, my kids are going to go to therapy one day. They just are, right? If they're not already in therapy, right? They're going to need to hash and work these things out, right? Their sense of self, what they like, what they don't like, what's processing, what's happened to them over the years, right? Processing the complicated relationships they have with me and their father, right? But I do think that fear of doing something wrong and of traumatizing our kiddos can prevent us from doing what we may actually feel in our gut is actually beneficial and helpful, what our kiddos need.
Yeah. And part of that for me is showing up authentically who I am. You know, I'm being me, which is not, I'm not being like therapist Danae, I'm being like real Danae, which is different. You know, when you're in an office working with a coaching or a therapy client, like that's going to look very different than when you're at home with your family. And, and that I think is an important thing for parents to note, is that therapy and parenting are very different. And when you're showing up at home, that looks different. I mean, do you feel the pressure to be therapeutic to your kids all the time at home?
I think it's almost like a seesaw that I'm on, right? Like being authentically me versus being authentically me as therapist, right? And on the days when I'm maybe more in my head versus kind of present in the moment with my kiddos, I will go more therapist. I'll think about, you know, what's therapeutic to say in this moment? What does my kiddo need to say in this moment versus, what am I feeling? I am not feeling happy right now. And I need some space. I need some boundaries. But it is, it's kind of a seesaw that I teeter-totter back and forth on, depending on probably how grounded I'm feeling in the moment. And also maybe how strong that fear is when it kicks in, of, or how big the kiddo's emotion is in the moment too. When I go into that, oh, I need to be therapist as parent mode, I do hit the space of paralysis where it's like, what do I do? Right. Versus I'm just in myself, being myself as Eden mom, you know?
Yeah. You get stuck in that. Did I say the right thing? What is the right thing?
Totally.
What's going to be the result if I say it this way or that way, or what's the right script? And I think part of the benefit of having some education and training is that you've internalized a lot of the principles that underlie being more intentional in parenting and in your relationships. And I think that's the part that we're all missing when we're consuming short form content on the internet. Like when I was in grad school, we spent like years just like hashing out psychological theory, like the underpinnings, how to understand the framework for our thoughts and our feelings and our emotions. And then through that, we've developed some tools and tricks and that kind of thing. But the reason that we're able to really be intentional and in the moment with a lot of the stuff with our kids even, is because we have that foundation that has been built throughout years of education and years of training. And I don't think that's something you can learn on the internet. And I also don't think it's something that parents need to learn in order to be effective and loving and warm and kind and present.
Agreed entirely. I think that, you know, what I would add to that list of education and training is self-work. You know, I would have been a very different parent at 23 than I was at 31, 32. And, you know, neither good nor bad, just different, right? I had lived more life, experienced more things and been able to process more of, you know, who I was and how I grew up and you know, what I want to take from that childhood and what I want to leave behind, and just an increased self-awareness that helped going into life as a parent.
Yeah. And that is as much about life experience as it is age, right? Like, I feel like that can come at any age. That might come at 22,
at 23.
And that's the real work, right? It's not getting everything right, saying all the right things. It's really just understanding who you are, what you're bringing to the table, like maybe little bits and pieces where you can learn and feel good about the way that you're showing up. But I don't know. I feel like a lot of the messages I'm seeing that are meant to be well-intentioned feel like a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And I think even when, you know, sometimes I might go to try some of those things that I see in that content or that I come up with in my therapist mind, my kiddos will shoot them down. You know, I remember one day, my oldest daughter had gotten really upset about something. I don't even remember, and I went to go talk to her, and she did not want to talk to me. And she said, because I don't want a therapist. I just want someone to listen. And then she said, I want Poppy, our dog. Poppy will listen and not tell anybody and not say anything. Exactly. And not say anything back. And that was a good lesson for me. I think, you know, she really just wants a presence there. She wants a dog who can be a dog, right? Like a mom who can just be a mom and not a therapist, right? Not someone who feels like they're working to be with their kid.
I feel like I'm most effective at really nurturing my kids and their mental health when I'm just giving them a hug. Like that is, I feel like that's most of the time the best possible thing that I can do. Like last night, my daughter at dinner, I could see she gets this expression on her face when she's holding back tears, and I know it so well. And we're sitting at the table and I can just see that like the tears are just like right about to pour out. And I was frustrated with her at the time because she wasn't eating. She was like trying to craft and eat at the same time. And like, it was a long day and we were tired and I just wanted to get the bedtime routine underway. And so I was frustrated and I just wanted her to eat and get the meal done. And she wanted to simultaneously craft and eat. And I got short with her. And then that's where we were at with like the tears, like on the verge of pouring out. And I saw that, and that helped me to center myself in that. Okay. Like right now, like you just need to show up with a hug and warmth and nurturing because she's feeling emotionally hurt by the way that you were interacting with her, Danae. And like, how do I repair? And for me, a lot of times that repair looks like just giving a hug and being there and being present.
Yeah. I have that. I love that. And I think it's a good pause. If we can let ourselves absorb that moment and the emotion in the moment. I think oftentimes with my youngest, she will jump to anger really quickly after experiencing maybe hurt or sadness or feeling misunderstood. And it has taken a lot of intentionality over the years to catch those little glimpses of hurt and sadness. And sometimes I like what you said. It's like a hug. Sometimes it's passing, just silently going and getting a Band-Aid and passing a Band-Aid over to her without making too much eye contact either. And kind of expressing this moment of, I see you, I'm here. And we can just stop for a second. Yeah.
Right. You don't have to have any perfect words at those moments.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
All right, Eden, we're going to pause right here for a quick 60-second break from today's sponsor.
Sure.
The sponsor for today is Byju's. That's spelled B-Y-J-U-S. Byju's Future School is committed to helping students become creators and shift from passive to active learning. Byju's Future School is a leading online learning platform. They currently offer coding and music courses for grades 1 to 12 and math courses for grades 1 to 8. Byju's Future School offers small group and one-to-one learning. That way students can receive personalized attention. Join the millions of parents who have chosen Byju's Future School for their kids. Your kid can build their own Minecraft character in the first 4 weeks. Visit byju.com/podcast to enroll in your first four classes. That's a $99 value for just $9.99. You get four classes for just $9.99 at byjus.com/podcast. All right, back to my chat with Eden. I just saw this book recently and now I'm going to misquote the name of it, but I don't know anything about the book, but I think the book is All the Right Words You Need as a Parent, or Say the Right Words as a Parent. I'm going to have to go look at it. I don't know anything about the book, but when I saw that, I'm just like, wow, like that's a lot. Like now I cannot memorize parenting scripts, you know? And I am guilty, but there is one script that I talk about a lot on the podcast that is really powerful for me, which is sometimes we get frustrated with each other, but we still love each other.
Yeah.
And the reason that's when I tell people that script, it's not like I want them to just memorize that script and repeat it. That script is really rooted in some of that underlying psychological theory, which shows that, and developmental theory, which shows that our kids are black and white thinkers. And they actually think when we're mad at them, that we don't love them anymore. So how do we start to bridge that gap and help them understand that those feelings can co-occur, right? We can be frustrated and we can still love someone at the same time because their young developing brains don't understand that. So what I'm doing is I am at those moments where I see that they may be feeling unloved and they may be asking for love in the most unloving of ways, that I need to give them that affirmation over and over again, that sometimes we get frustrated with each other, but we still love each other. And it's not the script I want you to remember. It's the principle, right?
Yeah.
That your kids need to hear it. They need to know that you can love them and you can be mad at them at the same time. And they need to hear it over and over again, maybe their whole life. And that's the hard part, right? When we give someone a short script like that is like, first of all, they're probably going to forget the script because they don't know the meaning of the script. But if you can really understand that meaning and what underlies it and what you're doing with it, you're going to remember it and you're going to make it your own. You're going to take the words, you're going to transform them into something that's more natural for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So my version of that script, I didn't even know you had that script, but my version of that script has been, I love you even when I'm mad. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's a phrase that, I would start the first half and just kind of organically my kiddos would say the second half. Right. Just like you said, our kiddos are black and white thinkers. And even as adults, I think we also have not fully absorbed that it's okay to feel both, that I can be frustrated and angry with my partner and at the same time, hold on to faith, trust, love for this person that I know is relatively constant in my life. Right. And that anger doesn't threaten that love, it can just coexist with it sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I think we can know that on an intellectual level, but having that security is a lifelong process, especially it depends, I think, a lot also on the way that you were parented and how your parents handled those interactions. You know, did they withhold love when they were upset with you? And I think if you did have a family like that, where, you know, the cold shoulder was punishment frequently, then you're probably going to feel that separation of love and anger more distinctly. But I don't know. I think we all probably experience that on some level.
Well, and I think as a parent too, like when we hear our kiddos complain about us or our partners, right? Or whatever, the teacher or something, right? I think that can be hard too. We can tend to get defensive or be like, well, you did this, or, well, I did this because blah, 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 versus, you know, what I've found with my oldest is she really just needs to feel like she can voice her frustrations and voice her hurt feelings. And again, you know, I can be the dog. I can just sit there and like stroke her back or, sit next to her and nod, you know, and that's enough. It doesn't, her frustration with me does not threaten my love for her.
Yeah.
And for her to know that and feel that is really powerful.
Yeah. It's funny that you said that about at school and like the way that your kids talk about you. So do you know the zones of regulation?
Have you heard of that? No, I don't.
Okay. Mm-mm. So we practice that in our family. So it's, you know, you're either in the red zone, which is like you're out of control, like losing it. And that could also be like you're overexcited, out of control body. The yellow zone means you're a little bit escalated, a little bit out of control. The green zone, you're calm and focused. And then the blue zone, which is you're feeling sad or lonely. And my daughter's school practices, it's pretty widely practiced in schools too. They practice it at my daughter's school. And, I had reached out to the teacher just saying that we do it at home and asking like if she was using it at school. And the teacher wrote me back and said, yes, actually yesterday she told me that she's always in the blue zone at home and she's usually in the green zone at school. And I just wanted to be like, I like use a lot of profanity because I'm just like, you know, like you're not really, you're actually generally pretty happy at home, but like those and have not taking that personal was hard, right? Mm-hmm. Like this idea that she told the teacher that like, she's really blue at home, because I guess my observations are that she's not actually very blue at home. And actually when she told me, I had asked her a similar question the previous week and she told me the opposite. She said, sometimes I'm green and blue at home and I'm usually blue at school. So this, kind of just like taking that with a grain of salt, you know, those feelings come and go, those zones come and go. And it's her being blue at home. It's not about me. It's about, you know, just her experiencing the whole range of emotions. So I think it can be hard to hear that too, especially when our kids are talking with teachers and that kind of thing. And, you know, like, especially doing the kind of work that we do, I think that we often set the bar pretty high for ourselves. Do you find that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That even as a therapist and as someone who has like a social media presence, right. And, is pretty active and out there in the world, the expectation that I have on myself is that we would have our stuff together, right? Like, even the messy moments would go perfectly. And, you know, there's that pressure and that voice to be doing it right. Right. To be doing it well. And for that to be witnessed or communicated to the communities that we're a part of. So school, sports teams, things like that.
So one of the things I've been reading, I follow a handful of different influencers in the parenting and self-care space. And one of the messages that I've been seeing coming up frequently lately is how worried we need to be about good kids and about kids who seem calm and happy. And I feel
great. Yeah. Oh,
I feel super triggered by this. I was a good kid. I definitely didn't have good emotions and good emotional experience of my whole life as a normal human. But when I read that, I think to myself, like, okay, like I have plenty to worry about, but now I need to worry about not just the kid who's having like meltdowns and acting out, but I also need to worry about the kid who seems to be perfectly content and happy. And I get that. Like, I understand the theory behind it. You know, some kids are internalizers and some kids are externalizers. Some kids like push down their emotions and they hold it all in, and some kids act out on it. I get it. But as a parent, like reading that messaging that like, hey, worry about your good kids, worry about your calm kids, worry about your happy kids. That just, the experience of that as a parent feels heavy. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, my oldest is an internalizer and my youngest is an externalizer. And my first thought kind of, as you shared that, was that their growth looks different, right? It's going to be growth for my externalizer, to start processing their emotions and be able to hold on to those emotions a little bit and tolerate them. And it's going to be growth for my internalizer to be expressing those emotions. And it's growth for her to rebel a little bit, and it's growth for her to be angry and swat at the younger sister, right? Because that's just not something that she does. So I think that post is probably at its core about not missing the people who are quiet, right? The people who have this, you know, calm exterior on the outside, but it is, it creates an anxiety around that, or it can, right, create an anxiety around even the good kids aren't safe, which,
yeah,
my goodness, you know, you don't need to walk around with that either. Right.
Right. And maybe the triggering part of that messaging is not the core messaging, but it's this idea that, hey, you should be worried about ... like add one more thing to your list because you aren't worried about enough. So here's something else that you need to be worried about. And I think that's why that content is so shareable, because it is something that's usually not on our radar. So when you see something like that, you're more likely to be like, oh, yeah, like what? That resonates. Yeah. I should share that with other people because it's new. It feels new. It feels innovative. And I think that's just at the moment. I'm sure a year from now, there'll be something else that we need to worry about that is becoming more shareable.
And it feeds on that fear, right? Of like, that shock of, oh, I hadn't been worrying about my good kid. Like, how do I need to be worrying about my good kid?
Right. Yeah. And we're using that word good kid, like just in quotation marks, because there are no such things as good and bad kids. Yes. But that's,
that's a good asterisk on that.
Right. but I mean, I do think in many ways that that's, this idea is not that different from like the stories, I don't know, when we had new babies, when there was a lot of stories about dry drowning going around, you know, about your kid could swallow like a tablespoon of water and they could die in the night. And it was very clickable. It was very shareable because it was scary and it was new information. Do you remember that going around?
Oh yeah. Oh yes. Yeah.
And internal decapitation. That's another one. Your kid could be riding in the car, get rear-ended, and they could look fine, but actually die in the night from internal decapitation. And I don't want to laugh, but I just feel like these things are so rare, and that is why they are news. You know, something I just recently read was that you can die playing the underwater game where like who can hold their breath longer. Like kids can like just be like who could like doing a competition of who can hold their breath longer, and that kids could die and they shouldn't be allowed to play that. And I think this was last summer that I read this, so I'm just kind of waiting for that to like pop up at the public pool, kind of like they're forbidden from holding their breath anymore. And like, sure, yes, maybe there have been accidents related to this. I'm definitely going to get like a few dozen people emailing me after this episode being like, my cousin's aunt's son passed away doing the and I feel for that, but I think when we are inundated with this fear mongering, that it really can negatively impact our well-being because fear is around every corner.
Well, and it can negatively impact our kiddos too, right? Yeah. We already probably are more controlling as parents than maybe past generations.
Yeah.
And when that fear intensifies, that desire to control also intensifies, and that can impact our kiddos' mental health, right? It can impact their own ability to trust themselves in discerning like, hey, this is a safe risk to take, this is not a safe risk to take, or wow, I really feel like I need some breath now, I'm going to go up above the water and take a breath. But I think there's benefit to increasing awareness. I think you have to be careful how you do that and how much you absorb of that as a parent.
Yeah. And it's hard. It's hard to know like when to turn it off and what to turn off. And it can feel like a rabbit hole going down the fear rabbit hole of information.
Yeah. So that was one thing that came up a lot as the COVID pandemic started to really take off. A lot of the parents that I see as clients, and they might be all across the board as far as like spectrum of COVID is real, COVID is not real, you know, all across that spectrum. But the conversation was, you know, how much exposure to what's happening or what could happen is healthy for me given this current situation, right? And how much is too much? How much is too anxiety provoking? When do I need to slow down, turn off social media? How do I make these decisions, right? There's so much anxiety that I think was peaked during, and is peaked maybe right now, even during the pandemic as parents, that it felt like there was such a high cost to making the wrong choice.
Yeah. And I think that the we feel this huge need for prevention in all aspects. Mm-hmm. How do we prevent illness? How do we prevent our kids from being sad? How do we prevent them from getting their feelings hurt? How do we prevent them from getting bullied? How do we prevent, you know, and that is also a lot of the pressure that I feel as a parent is feeling like I need to prevent mm-hmm. all possible negative incidents that my kids might come across. And I don't think that's healthy.
Well, and it's not realistic, right? It's not a realistic capacity that we have. We can't. But some way we get the messaging that that's something we should strive for.
Yeah, it is.
Out of well intentions again, right? Out of our love for our kiddos and our desire to protect them and keep them safe.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's the difference between our generation and our parents' generation is that our parents' generation didn't know how to identify a lot of this stuff, and they didn't have the resources to prevent and to, you know, therapize their children. And they, as a result, didn't feel the pressure to be all the things and do all the things. And now we are faced with so much information that a lot of that information feels like pressure.
Yep, completely. I think social media has obviously like expedited the distribution of all the information and access to the resources. But again, we have to really discern when the access is too much and not healthy for us, and when it's still really valuable and helpful and informative.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also understanding the different venues for information, you know, like before the pandemic, I think podcasts were a great source of information. You could listen to like a 45 minute to an hour discussion on a topic. You could think about your own position, what you might do, how you relate to it. And now, you know, I've seen hugely in my work that people have shifted from longer form content like podcasts to 1 minute Instagram reels. And that's where they're going to get their information. And it cheapens it. I mean, for lack of better words, like you're reading the book jacket instead of the book, and you're missing a lot in that. Mm-hmm. You feel like you're doing something maybe, but I do think you're missing a huge, huge piece of the puzzle, and just kind of sampling and tasting and not really knowing what suits you or what fits you.
And that may be a good takeaway, Danae, like this kind of discipline of choosing to read the book and not just the book jacket, right? Out of a desire to really understand something more comprehensively, and to be able to take away the kind of core message versus the quick to-dos, don't do's, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's hard sometimes because that makes us face our own stuff, right? If we're going to start doing our own work.
Yeah. Yeah. And some days we don't want to do that. So.
No. And I don't think you always have to. Like, I think that
you
can avoid as a coping mechanism, but I think when we're ready to take action and start making change, that we need something a little bit more than short form social media content.
Yeah,
for sure. So, well, thank you so much for chatting with me about this, Eden. As you can tell, I'm like kind of verbally processing all of this. I'm trying to figure out like what my role is, you know, like I think I have contributed to this pressure in ways and I don't want to anymore. You know, like I want to be showing up with meaningful content that's going to make people think and make people reflect and make people figure out what's best for them. And it's hard to do that in a world where everyone wants like a tweet, you know, rather than a book. So I don't know.
It's a challenge.
What about you?
Yeah. I think again, my hope is that I've never really been one that leans toward prescription, right? Like, do this and that should fix it. Right. It's more about building up someone's own intuition and instinct and nurturing that inner that inner voice that can say yes or no, or I'll try this, and building up that self-trust. But it is, again, it's hard to do that on platforms that really are so short, short-term, or, you know, two-dimensional.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. And where can we find you online? On Instagram, Eden, after all this, or your website, get right? in contact with you.
Yeah. So my Instagram is at Eden Heider, and then my podcast, I have a podcast, season one is available. It's Inside Out Podcast. And, my website, either edenheider.com or Inside Out Collaborative, which is my, therapy practice that I share with my therapist husband.
Great. And that's Heider, H-Y-D-E-R.
You got it. Good job.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Danae.
Thanks again for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed my chat with Eden. If you want the links to get in touch with her, go to simplefamilies.com/episode291. As always, thanks for tuning in and have a good one.